So the style of what we're doing here is we're going to be going through Teshuvos. Now, what are Teshuvos for those of us who aren't familiar? Well, that's responsa literature. So oftentimes when you ask a, not oftentimes actually, less often, when you ask someone who's a Gadol Hador, what's a Gadol Hador? A very prestigious rabbi, meaning not myself, but somebody who, let's say I have a question, or let's start earlier. Let's say someone in the community has a question. So you go to Rabbi Cohen or you go to myself. And then if we don't know the answer, we likely consult somebody like Rabbi Jachter or Rabbi Ezra Schwartz, who are, higher tier rabbis who are experts. And then on top of them, there's no official hierarchy, but this is kind of how it works. There's people like Rav Hershel Schechter, who many people turn to, and he's a Posek Hador. So people like Rav Moshe Feinstein, people like Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, if any of these names ring a bell. And what they do is that sometimes when they get questioned, depending on the proclivities of the particular rabbi, they will write a responsa. They will write a tshuva, which is not, ex it's kind of like an essay, but it's really a response to the question that they receive. And so the goal of what we're going to be doing here is what I've been doing in this, what we've been doing together is I've almost been doing my own mini responsa because I had a question I wanted to address. I put together a source sheet of materials of different opinions, and I try to present both sides and give you my opinion at the end of the day. So not to worry, I'll still give my opinion every now and then, but I don't think that's what we come here for. But what we're going to be looking at now is, well, instead of seeing what Moshe Kurtz's analysis of the topic is, maybe there are people who are bigger experts. Spoiler alert, there are many. Who have addressed many critical questions. And what we're going to do is we're going to look through their tshuvas. We're going to look through their responsa to these major questions. And what I want to do is I want to go posek by posek, posek being a halachic decisor of Jewish law. And the first posek we're going to look at is Rav Moshe Schirnbach, who is one of the heads of the Eda HaCharedus. He's one of the top Haredi rabbis in the world. And not to worry, for those of you who say, well, let's say you're like me, you grew up in the Haredi world and you that's all you know. Well, we're also going to be looking at people like Rav Nachum Rabinovich, Zichrona Livracha, who is a very important Dat Yelumi, religious Zionist rabbi in Israel. He passed away this year. And also, if I could get my hands on it, I hope to do some tshuvos from Bnei Banim, which is Rav Henkin, who sadly passed away recently as well. He, first of all, he's famous in his own right because he was a huge posek, but also, does anyone else know what he contributed to Jewish society? What institution he was very heavily involved in? Toby, it looks like you tried. You're muted.
Well, his wife's institution, Nishmat.
Very good. So Rabbanit Henkin, his wife, she founded Nishmat, which is that's where they trained Yoatzot Halacha. So our we have in our community, Yoatzet Dina Block. So it's very important because women get to ask sensitive questions about marital laws to a trained woman who knows those halachos. So Rav Henkin was the halachic authority for them. So he got a lot of questions pertaining especially to family matters. But anyway, that's just a taste of what we'll get ahead. What I want to look at first is Rav Moshe Schirnbach. And what I tried to do was, over the next few weeks, I curated a number of topics that I thought would be of interest to us. And so the first tshuva we're going to look at, there's currently 7 volumes out there. And we're basically, you know how that song in the Sound of Music, let's start from the very beginning. It's a very good place, right? We're going to do the opposite of that. We're going to start from the very end. We're going to go to the very last tshuva, all the way at the end of volume 7. And that's where we're going to begin because it deals a very relevant topic, which is vaccination.
Rabbi, when was all this curated or assembled?
Meaning,
This
like
last tshuva.
when did I select all the tshuvos?
No. When was the tshuva made?
Oh, this tshuva. So, when was the last measles outbreak in that we had? When was that?
Couple of years ago, I guess.
That's when this was written, I believe. So this is
Okay.
he's alive today, Rav Moshe Schirnbach. He should live
Yes.
to a ripe old age. So for all I know, there might be an 8th
He was
volume.
born in 1928. I looked him up. I mean, he is in a ripe old age.
Yes, and he already is, and God willing, many more
Yeah.
years. So there might be an 8th volume in the works that I'm not aware of, and maybe there'll be a coronavirus tshuva in there. But this is the closest
Okay.
thing that I could find that is relevant, because right now today, you see in the news that people, thank God, are beginning to get vaccinations. But sadly, what you'll see, and again, I want to really try to stay away from pointing out particular people and getting close to Lashon Hara. But sadly, you could go around to different parts of the Jewish community, and you'll see they're not exactly adhering to the standards that we try to have. You know, at a good shul, you walk in, everyone has to wear a mask. I've gone over to many people many times, and I've told them to, you know, there's like a thing today where people, they cover their mouths but not their nose, and they think they'll get away with it. I don't get the point of it. You know, it's like you're wearing it just to fulfill the obligation of wearing a mask, you know, but you don't believe in actually what the mask accomplishes. Some people slip down. It's not their fault, but
you
know, like people
them
literally
the,
try to
the
get
nose,
away.
The nose is the most important thing to cover, more so than the mouth. That's what medical
I think
Dr. Shapiro,
mouth
I didn't even know
is
that.
More important because the mouth coughs and the mouth speaks loudly and it spreads more germs. I think one thing about covering your nose is if you cover your mouth and your nose and you have glasses, they fog up.
Yeah.
And then you can't read.
There are a lot of challenges. During davening, I'm constantly taking my glasses on off. I have to check. So I finished one esrei. Are we ready to start chazaras hashatz? I have to put my glasses on and look around and I take it off. It's a challenge, but you know what? That should be our biggest challenge, is dealing with our fogged glasses. So the question is one chayav to cover their nose? That's the question. No, I'm kidding. That's not the question of the tshuva. So the question of the tshuva is, I'm trying to think of the most tactful way of putting it, but if you go around the more Haredi right-wing community, they are less machmir, they are less stringent on wearing masks than you will find in the modern Orthodox community. So a lot of things that we're going to see in this tshuva, they might not be news to some of us, but in the Haredi world, where you'll go around right now during COVID, I visited I see my grandparents are here, so they'll know what I'm talking about, because they live in the same neighborhood as my parents. So when I went to visit my family in Bayswater, I was trying to find a masked minion. So the best I could do was I found a shul that had in the women's, so the women don't come during the week in those communities. That's just the social dynamic. So the women's section was dedicated as the mask section. So all like the masses people are in the main area. And then all of us like people who, you know, are the outcasts are wearing our masks in the women's section. And they have like a tall like mechitza that's transparent, but plexiglass going through the entire thing. So that was my experience. So basically that's a lot different than what many of us here in a good shalom see if we decide to come to shul, where everyone's wearing a mask, social distance chairs, you know, Chris comes in with his spray gun. It's a very different dynamic. So I only bring that up not as a point of criticism, but as a point to understand that this is like a more moderate yeshiva I'm describing. So Alachas Kama Vakama, certainly Ramosha Sternbach, he's in the trenches of the Haredi world. He's like Haredi Jewry incarnate. So that's what I bring to our attention. Now, let me ask you a question, just methodologically. I have a few primary sources that I will share on the screen that are translated, but the tshuva itself is in Hebrew, and maybe if God blesses me with more than 24 hours in a day, I'll type them up in English at some point, but they're not all translated, though I'll translate as we go through. Would everyone prefer that I still go through it on the screen, or would you like me to put the tshuva in the chat and then people can look at it if they wish to, and otherwise we could just keep everyone on the screen? Does anyone have a preference of how we do this? Would anyone be following along if I put it on the screen? It's completely Hebrew text. Does anyone want that?
No.
Okay, good. No. So let me take a moment and put it on the screen. There are a few translated primary sources that I will bring up on screen share when it becomes relevant. So let me just put the document on here. Let's see. Wow, it gave me the opportunity to do it before when I tested this before I logged on. Now it's not giving me the option.
Why should it work now?
Why should it work now? Exactly. Okay. I'm not going to fiddle with this right now. So anyway, does anyone? What was that?
I thought you were going to put it in the chat.
I was going to.
Oh, that's what you had trouble with.
Now it's not letting me share from my local drive. So The question is, do you want to give me 1 minute to send it to my Google Drive and then upload it from there? I can do that. So, or do people? Or
which are you more comfortable doing it with?
Well, if it's not too awkward for everyone, and you give me 1 second, I'll put it into Google Drive, and then I will upload it, and then I'll put it into this chat. So, there we go. There should be some sort of like interlude music while everyone's on hold, right? Toby, tell us about the bris today.
Oh, mazel tov!
It was quite something, actually. There was, the bris itself was just, really just family and one or two of Daniel's work associates and in the house and, just really immediate family. And it was really beautiful and special. And they named the baby after my father, which just meant so much to me. I mean, they gave, the full Hebrew name and the English name. So I was just over the
beautiful.
Moon. And then they had out in a tent, they had put up an open tent so that they could accommodate a few more people, but not a lot. I mean, it was like, maybe 30 people, let's say 30 people out in this tent. But my son works with a number of Hasidim, and they decided to treat him to musical entertainment for the bris.
What
it was these two musicians basically led the most amazing kumzits you've ever seen in your life, and it went on until 3 p.m. it was unbelievable, and all I could keep thinking was, if my father is watching this, he is so happy right now, because he loved that kind of thing. And it was quite the day.
Okay. So mazel tov again.
Mazel tov.
Thank you.
Right. And Toby, everything came off okay?
The baby's crying, so I guess so.
Well, they all cry.
They all cry.
Yes, yes. A good excuse to get extra wine.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think that all went well.
I figured out the issue.
Much nachas.
Thank you.
All right, so I figured out the issue, but unfortunately it's not something that'll be resolved this session, which is this Zoom for the shul is not under my own account, so I can't link it to my Google Drive, which has the document on it. So these are complicated things I'll figure out another time, but suffice to say, I'll put the tshuva on the screen this time, and next time I'll give it to everyone else. So here we go. As much as I'd love to see everyone's faces, I could only select four of you that Zoom will randomly put on my screen. So I see Reno, Audrey, and Toby. So the Zoom gods apparently favor you the most.
Wow.
I don't know. It was that random. But I trust that the rest of you are there. All right. Here we go. So Rav Moshe Sternbach received this question. Rav Moshe Sternbach is located in Israel. He received the following question. So rabbi from America, a Haredi rabbi, reached out to Moshe Sternbach, and he asked Moshe Sternbach, I'll summarize the paragraph here because I don't want to get too much into the nitty-gritty of the letter, but essentially the question is that there are yeshivas in Brooklyn, in Muncie, in Kiryas Yoel, you can imagine those kind of places, where there is a measles outbreak. And the question is, some parents will vaccinate their children, but other parents do not want to vaccinate their children. So the question is, do the parents who vaccinate their children have a right to tell the school, and meaning does the school administration have a right to bar entry to students who do not want to vaccinate for whatever reason it might be? Presumably, as we'll see later in the tshuva, these people, these families, they are, I don't know what you want to say, relying on, they are based on a minority of doctors who believe that vaccines could be harmful. My understanding is that has been debunked. I think there's like questions of vaccines causing autism, and that was
right.
Like a something that was being flouted a little bit. And my understanding from the medical community is that that's been debunked a number of times already. But some people still think that taking vaccines is an issue. Or, I mean, taking a vaccine, my understanding also, if we have any doctors who'll correct me, is there is always some form of risk when taking a vaccine, because you are taking whatever that virus is in some sort of dilapidated state. You're putting it into your body. And that's why sometimes after someone has a vaccine, they could get a minor fever. They could feel minor effects as if that they actually had that disease. So the question is, if for whatever those reasons are, some people in school don't want to take vaccines, should the families who want a vaccine have right to bar entry to those who don't want to? So you have to keep in mind, significant swaths of the community believe that it's okay not to vaccinate. So Rav Moshe Sternbach says, I had this issue in Israel, and I'm going to copy basically my letter that I sent to the Israeli rabbis in the hopes that it will be applicable for the United States of America as well. So let's understand. So there's a question I want to raise as well. It's not so simple. What is the, if anyone could Google this for me, you could let me know. What is the fatality rate of measles? Anyone know that offhand?
What it used to be?
What is it, within this past 5 years? What's the fatality rate?
1%?
Someone's not vaccinated, they catch measles. What's the...
1%?
Fatal.
Fatal? So someone catches it, they automatically die?
No.
1%.
So here's the question.
1% sound.
What?
1%?
1%? Is that a conjecture or is that a...
No, I think that's a good guess.
Okay.
But it has other effects. I mean, even if you don't die,
eyesight
is very badly affected. Their hearing could be affected. Different things.
Very good. So we're going to bring up that nuance, which is just because someone doesn't die, it doesn't mean that it's not a form of a danger as well. So you remember the first shiur that we had together, our first inaugural Monday night shiur, we talked about risk-taking in halacha. Mm-hmm. So this is, think of this as a bit of a sequel to that, which is I really want to get into the question of, well, how likely does something need to harm somebody that we need to start considering it pikuach nefesh, that it's something that is dangerous enough that it would supersede general halachic principles. For instance, you could break Shabbos if it means protecting somebody and treating them if they were infected by measles. That's one of the questions earlier in this tshuva that we're going to look at.
By the way, Rabbi, can we look at this with respect to the corona vaccine?
Yes, exactly. So Phyllis, can we look at this in terms of corona? So that is my goal. What I would like to do is look at this tshuva which deals with the measles outbreak and ask ourselves the question, A, do we agree with what's being posited in here? And then B, based on our thoughts on his position on measles, is there any reason not to extrapolate it to coronavirus? So yes, Phyllis, I'm really hoping that we are thinking about the implications for coronavirus. As far as I know, Rav Moshe Sternbach has not put out a tshuva on coronavirus yet. None that I've seen.
It's too new.
Too new. Rav Asher Weiss has put out. Rav Schechter's been putting out. Rav Rimon has been putting out. There's a lot of poskim who are putting out tshuvos on a
new stuff.
What?
New stuff is coming up every day. First of all, it's not the same kind of vaccination as measles, because they don't use attenuated or weakened virus. They use a manufactured virus. It's entirely different. And secondly,
does that mean it's a lower risk?
It doesn't have the same risk, but they say that people who are highly allergic to certain things, like maybe peanuts, eggs, and that kind of stuff, and carry EpiPens, they should not take the vaccination.
As I read, it was some modification on DNA level, which nobody actually knows what consequences could be.
Ah, you're saying that there are some people say that could alter your DNA if you take it?
No, it kind of doing that way.
Is that a legitimate concern, or is that more of a conspiracy theory?
I never heard of that one.
All right, well, you could read about it.
I'm too far from that area to make conclusion, but it definitely works in different ways than the regular vaccine.
Well, I guess it's a while till I'll qualify, so hopefully it'll straighten out that stuff by then. But, okay, the question is in halacha is, how likely, what fatality rate does something have to have that it constitutes bikuach nefesh, meaning that I have to consider this to be an imminent danger and it can supersede halacha? You know, if one in 10,000 people die, that's not pikuach nefesh. So, but if one out of 10 people are dying, that's for sure pikuach nefesh. So where do we draw the line here? So let's take a look here in the tshuva. So he has a machlokas. There's one school of thought that believes that, oh, so right here, let's just, for measles, I'll tell you, he puts it over here. You know, lefi mechakrei harofim, Shutzku b'fanai harisha b'Europa chalu b'chatzeves arba'im v'achas of ish, that there were 41,000 people in Europe at the time that this tshuva was written that were infected with measles. Mitocha mesu arba'im ish, and from them 40 people died. So that is 1 out of 1,000. Now, is 1 out of 1,000 enough to warrant us being concerned for bikuach nefesh? So according to the Magen Mishnah, yes, we are concerned. Can everyone see the source I'm putting on a screen here from Rambam and Mishnah Torah? I just switched to something else. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it doesn't work. Can I get a...
Yes.
Okay, good. Because I see you, Audrey. You're one of the people who shows up on my screen. So I get a thumbs up. So here's the case. A woman is giving birth. So we know if someone's giving birth, you call up the taxi and you get a ride to the hospital even on Shabbos. So we break Shabbos. Why? Because delivering the baby is pikuach nefesh, and the mother being treated properly is pikuach nefesh as well. So woman after the water breaks and until she gives birth, and even after she gives birth, at shloshi yamim, even to 3 days after she gives birth, we break Shabbos for her, and we do everything that she needs. Whether she says I need it or whether she says I'm fine. If the doctors say you need to take a certain medication, we need to operate some sort of machinery for you on Shabbos, it doesn't matter. She's still considered to be within pikuach nefesh. Now, why are we concerned? So the idea, the principle that the Magen Mishnah derives from here is that if there is even a 1 out of 1,000 chance of someone dying, that is enough for it to be considered pikuach nefesh. So if there is a disease going around and a fatality rate is at least 1 out of 1,000, that already brings us into the realm of pikuach nefesh. Then there's a case in the Magen Avraham here where he says, the question is, we'll get to it in a moment, are you allowed to kill a gecko on Shabbos that might go into your drink? But the important idea here is that sakana is so severe that someone is put in mortal danger. So if 1 out of 1,000 people could die, then you could break basically almost every halakha in the book to save their life. What is the potential issue with this position as a matter of policy? In principle, it sounds good. Okay, 1 in 1,000, that's where we draw the line. If it's 1 out of 1,001, then that's too far-fetched. If it's any more than 1 out of 1,000, then that's bikuach nefesh. What might be the issue with a policy like this, of 1 out of 1,000 constituting bikuach nefesh? Right? Imagine you're the posek, you're a Moshe Sternbach, and you're trying to deliberate. What's the issue of having an expansive view on bikuach nefesh? What's likely to happen? Well, the issue is that it might get abused. You see, so here's a case in the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. So the Magen Avraham says that one is the Asul Aruch HaShamamis B'Shabbos. I think it's translated as gecko. I could be wrong, but I think it's a gecko or some sort of lizard or creature, that one is not allowed to kill a shamamis on Shabbos. He says it might go into your food, and then you might eat the gecko, and then you'll turn different colors like it. No, you'll die if you eat the gecko. So he says, it's not a common occurrence. You just cover your food instead. And, you know, who says it's even going to hurt you, even if you do consume it, that you'll die from it? And so Rav Akiva Eiger, going forward a good number of years, Chazon Ish says, who, by the way, the Chazon Ish is very important in the books of Rav Moshe Schirnbach, because the Chazon Ish is basically a predecessor of sorts, because he also was one of the chief Haredi Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael. He writes, you can't just call every occurrence of possibly something happening to somebody pikuach nefesh. Dim Kane, you're basically giving a license to anyone who wants to commit a sin, to anyone who wants to break halacha. Because all you need to do is you find the slightest possibility that maybe, you know, if I don't drive to shul, or if I do this, or if I don't eat pig, then pigs, like, you know, someone like comes up with a theory that pig is more healthy than eating cows. So they'll rationalize eating pork chops instead. And basically what you're doing is that if there's even a small chance of saving someone's life, you're able to break halacha, 1 in 1,000 chance, what you're doing is you're giving people who want to circumvent keeping certain halachic dictates, by all I need to do is just prove that there's a slight chance that they might be a little bit less healthy if they keep halacha. Here's a great example. I'm going to argue that instead, so there's a mitzvah to have three meals on Shabbos, Friday night, Shabbos day, and Shalosh Shudas. So I'm going to make the argument now that, you know what, this is very unhealthy to have three meals on over the course of Shabbos. I don't know, you're a dietitian, somehow you figure that out. So you're going to say, because by having Shalosh Shudas, it's going to decrease my chances of living past the age of 90, so therefore I'm not going to eat Shalosh Shudas anymore. You know, like you can imagine different theories coming up like that. And what Rav Akiva Eiger is worried about is people are going to say, V'yatir lava b'shabbos v'shil parnasa. People are going to say, you know what? I have to work on Shabbos. Why? Because if I don't work on Shabbos, it's bikuach nefesh. And essentially what bikuach nefesh, and this is something I like noting a lot, you'll get that this is a trend for me, is that bikuach nefesh today, how many people, you know, let me just, by raise of hands, how many people here have Facebook or social media?
Have what?
Facebook or social media. If you don't know what that is, then you're not on it. I count five. Okay. So if you go on to Facebook, this is some, I know I say this a lot, but it's true. It's basically, if you want to win a halakhic or Jewish argument on Facebook, you just invoke the term pikuach nefesh. That's what it's become. I'm telling you, if you go in, I try not to spend too much time, but if you read in like these different Jewish Facebook groups, like God Save Us From Your Opinion or whatever, like some people, they've never cracked open a Shulchan Aruch in their entire life. But like you'll be on the internet, you'll be in an argument with someone. Someone will say, yeah, you know, it's usur to work. You're not allowed to work on Shabbos. They'll say, yeah, well, pikuach nefesh says I have to do it. And so it's pikuach nefesh is an important halakhic principle. But I think it's basically become the new tikkun olam, because there's even been a bracha that some people who are not really, I guess, halakhically oriented, they made up a new blessing, a new bracha, that when you put on a mask, you make a bracha al shmiras nefesh, on protection of your soul. Yeah. It was actually being spread around Facebook a number of months ago toward the beginning of Corona, once they determined we needed to wear masks. And, you know, they were touting it like they just wrote like a groundbreaking shuva. But it was like literally just you made a bracha, bracha ta Hashem, kiel mechalam, you know, al shmiras nefesh, or something like that. Can't really say asher kishon with sos sivan. I don't know. So that's something new that's going around. So the Chazon Ish and Rav Moshe Schirnbach are concerned that if one runs amok, you can take any principle and run amok with it, right? If yarta haram mikirbecha, you shall eradicate evil from your midst. We're going to look at a tshuva from Moshe Schirnbach in one of our future classes that I selected about reporting a child molester. So where he deals with that issue, I know it's a very daunting topic. but he really reveals what's going on in the yeshivas in those worlds. So he brings up the halachic principle of uviyarta ramikarbech, you should eradicate all evil from your midst. Now, here's the thing. I could really go pretty far with that concept. I should eradicate all evil from my midst. Well, the issue is, then it just, if that's all I know from the Torah are those few words, then I can who determines what's evil? You know, who determines who's supposed to get eradicated, annihilated from our midst? So if I just take a few words out of context from the Torah and I form a whole philosophy around it, it's not really the Torah anymore. It's really just a catchphrase. So that's the concern that the Chazon Ish had. So here's the compromise position that Reb Moshe Shtirnbach comes out with. And this speaks to the point that I think Toby and maybe Anne were raising beforehand. When they write that one out of a thousand is just too far-fetched for us to call pikuach nefesh, so here's the thing. When I say one out of a thousand people suffer from the measles when they catch it, let's say that's it. Does that mean that they literally die from it? Or maybe just yichones litzakana, they enter into, they have to be put in the hospital for contracting it, but they won't necessarily die. If that's what we mean when we say one out of a thousand people are getting a, are, you know, having a terrible, I don't know what the right word for it is.
Reaction,
thank you. A terrible reaction to measles, then that's called yichones litzakana. They enter into a situation, they enter into a circumstance where they are in a sakana, they are in danger, but they don't necessarily die.
How is that different from a woman having a baby?
Just, if I could just finish this formulation, I'll get to your question in a moment. But when the danger is right in front of our very eyes, a woman dying during childbirth, that's, you know, especially with today's technology, I believe that's more than one out of a thousand. I would hope so. Yeah. We still treat that as bikuach nefesh. So obviously there is, because there, so there back in the day, I mean, nowadays it's different, thank God. But back then, a one out of a thousand woman dying on the birth stool was not a, you know, unfortunately, that was not a far-fetched number, not a far-fetched figure to have. So, and therefore, even still, the rabbi said that you have to break Shabbos in order to help such a woman. So why? Because there's not just she entered into a dangerous situation. Her life was literally on the line. So one of the nuances needs to be brought in is the nature of the reaction to contracting the measles virus. You know, does that mean one of a thousand people is going to die? Or does it mean one of a thousand people is going to be hospitalized but could still recover from it? And then you brought up also, well, what does that mean? Well, maybe they'll lose hearing. Maybe they will lose more of the other things that measles could cause. I don't look too careful.
Eyesight.
So
heart problems.
Oh,
heart problems.
Yeah. Zadie, were you saying something? Okay. So there's something called sakanas aver, which isn't as high as pikuach nefesh. But sakanas aver is what if your arm, you know, is in danger. If you don't treat it on Shabbos, you'll have to amputate it. So sakanas aver also is very important. And it almost has the same qualifications that one could supersede many prohibitions in order to save a limb as well. So if someone is at risk of losing their eyesight, the eyes, especially in halacha, are very significant. And that might be enough also in order to be considered akin to pikuach nefesh. So that's important to note as well. But here's the thing. So now we've established when it comes to the measles, one out of a thousand people suffer, it seems to be a fatality. So therefore it seems, even according to the Chazon Ish, that constitutes pikuach nefesh. So here's the thing. Reb Moshe Shtirnbach says, therefore there should be some action that is taken. Now, to understand the next paragraph, I just want to show one more primary source. This is the Shulchan Aruch. Going back to our discussion, or elaborating on our discussion about someone who is sick and how healing a sick person supersedes Shabbos. In Shnayim Omrim, so here's the thing. You have a person in the hospital. You have a number of doctors who are surrounding him. They assess them, and the majority of doctors say that this person does not need a medical treatment that will break Shabbos. However, im shnayim omrim tzarech, if even two doctors say that this person needs to take this medical treatment, afilu mea omrim eino tzarech, even if 100 other doctors say he doesn't need that measurement, afilu chola hachola omer imam sheino tzarech, and even if the patient himself says, I don't need this measure, so if this is like, let's say it's on Yom Kippur, and he says, I don't need to eat, but two doctors say, you need to eat, even if 100 people, 100 other doctors say he does need to eat, we feed him nonetheless. And the same thing, even if there's only one doctor, but if the patient himself concurs that he needs it as well. Even if 100 doctors say he doesn't need to eat, machilo, so we feed him on Yom Kippur nonetheless. And we're not concerned that the chola says I don't need, but rather we rely on that one rofe. Now here's the thing. In general in halacha, we have a principle called acharei rabim lahatos, that everything is based on majority. And a based in a rabbinical court, when they make a decision, it's based on majority rule. When I figure out in kashrus, I have an idea of batel b'rov and batel b'shishim, that a minority gets consumed within a majority mixture. I have the big vat of chalent and a little drop of milk falls in. That's still called chalent. It's not basar b'chalav. It's not treif. So here's the thing, though. Here's an interesting case, because here the majority of the medical community, at least this is how Rav Sternbach is presenting it. I'm sure someone will tell me that I have the facts wrong here, but this is his presentation. The majority of the medical community agrees that one who vaccinates is safer than one who does not vaccinate. However, there is a minority of the medical community. I don't know if you call it a significant minority, but there are doctors that can be found, because apparently if you tune on to certain news stations that I shall not name, they will put these doctors up there. They say that taking a vaccine is more dangerous than not taking the vaccine in general. Cause autism for children. Those are things that have been brought up in years earlier. So Rav Moshe Shermach says, when it comes to, the halacha usually is when it comes to a case of mikuach nefesh, we don't go basar rov. We don't base things on majority. If there's even a minority chance that by taking a certain measure or by not taking a certain measure, we would save somebody's life, then you can't do it. So over here, there's a minority chance that by taking the vaccine, somebody will suffer, somebody will die. So the question is someone allowed to go, is someone allowed to rely on the majority to take the vaccine when there's a minority saying if you take it, it could cause terrible repercussions? Is one allowed to take the vaccine then? That's the question he has. So he says, this whole principle doesn't apply over here. Why? Because hacha shani, davin nizel basar miyat erovim, because if I rely on the minority opinion of doctors, adai nishar b'chashash b'kohu nevesh adas rov erovim, then I'm ignoring what the majority of doctors say. And a majority of doctors thinks it's safe. If I rely on the majority of doctors, and I make sure that the kids get vaccinated, then it's only a cheshash pikuach nefesh. There's only a concern according to minority opinion of doctors. And therefore, he says, therefore, we go back to the usual principle of the Torah over here. Since by relying on a minority opinion, I'm not going to be any safer. Now, if I rely on the majority opinion of doctors, therefore, we should go based on the row, based on the majority. And the majority says to take the vaccine. Therefore, a parent does not have a right to withhold the vaccine from his child. That's a very critical line over there. It's not the parent's decision. If these are the facts, The facts are the majority of doctors sanction a vaccine and say a person's safer by taking it. The father or the parent has no right to withhold the vaccine from their child. And he's putting him in danger. And not only that, you would think, maybe, okay, look, people can make decisions for their own family. That's not our business. But here, it's not just his business. You're causing possible pain and endangerment to another person. Okay. Why? Because this kid doesn't receive a vaccine. He's going to pack up his bags. He's going to come into cheder for the day. He's going to be shuckling back and forth. And he's going to be coughing over his chavrusa. And his chavrusa is going to get sick. And then he's going to get his second seder chavrusa sick. And then he's going to get his family sick. And God forbid it. That's how it spreads. So when someone says, I'm not going to take the vaccine, I'm okay maybe taking the risk of not taking the vaccine. But everyone else at school, they didn't sign up for that. They didn't sign up to be with this guy who's denying taking a vaccine. Therefore, Moshe Sternbach says that the school, therefore, so even if the chance of a kid dying, right, because they say sometimes kids have better immune systems, they're used to getting germs, they'll survive, but even on that small chance, why should the rest of the parent body, why should the rest of the family send their kids to the school have to suffer on account of the kids who are not being vaccinated, Moshe Sternbach says. Therefore, we're gonna try to skip because we're running low on time. Therefore, he says, "Umemela av hanholas haTalmude Torah ena michuyavin lekava etzam yel shalitz chasim." The schools, the yeshivas, they do not need to accept a child who is not vaccinated. Kimshu misuka v'nogi l'rotzan ahor ma'choshin l'nezik. Since he's endangering all the other parents and families that are in the school.
But now, if everything else is vaccinated, why they worry at all?
If everyone else is vaccinated, and why worry? Ah, that's a good
question. Why parents of children who is vaccinated are worried at all? They are safe. It problem with other not vaccinated children or maybe parents, but
I think one of the concerns, and you know, this is let's do what Phyllis advised and try to extrapolate to coronavirus, is that maybe, you know, a young healthy person, they could take the vaccine, but maybe they have a grandparent at home who has some sort of condition, is immunocompromised. And for whatever reason, they can't take the vaccine. Or I think there's a whole question. I think they still haven't figured this out, what the effects of the vaccine are on pregnant women. So what about a pregnant woman who can't take the vaccine? So she's going to, especially in the Haredi community, where, as we talked about in our previous year, birth control is generally looked down upon in the Haredi community. It's taken to only very limited instances. But as you can see, just by looking around, people are having lots of children. So these kids might be vaccinated. Who says their mother can be vaccinated? So they're going to come home, and then their mother, God forbid, contracts the virus. And then she has nothing to protect herself and potentially nothing to protect the fetus either. So I think you're right. In an ideal world, all these people will be vaccinated. So let all the anti-vaccine people assume that risk without risking and endangering the people who want to be vaccinated. The issue is that there are people who want to be vaccinated, but just aren't able to take that vaccine.
I want to just add one thing.
Yes, Ruth.
Regarding the vaccine. One shoe doesn't fit all. I think it's up to your doctor to determine. There's going to be various types of vaccines. It depends on your health history. Your doctor has to make this decision. This Absolutely. One is not going to be. In other words, one size shoe doesn't fit at all.
Absolutely, Ruth. So you know, like we say, consult your local Orthodox rabbi, consult your local primary care physician. So yes, definitely your primary care physician or wherever you go to, who knows your medical history, is going to be the best equipped to give you advice on whether you should take it or not. So that's exactly my point. My point is that there are people, based on their medical histories, might be advised by their doctors that we don't know if it's safe yet to take a vaccine. So those people who are not able to take the vaccine because they're following a legitimate medical advice that they're getting from their doctor, they're being in danger from that kid coming home. So that's also an important consideration.
Not every vaccine is 100% effective. For example, with the flu, which we're used to, there's always a question when a new flu season comes around, whether they properly guessed what this new strain is going to be like this year. And a lot of people might not be protected. So if you have a bunch of kids sitting in a classroom, and let's say all of them had the vaccine, some of them are still going to be exposed to it. If a person comes in and has the flu, they could get it from them. They had the vaccine.
So it's not right. So the vaccines aren't 100% effective. But I guess what one would argue is that one is safer with it than without it. So I think
yes. Yes, because the flu virus mutates, and that's what causes the confusion every year.
Lloyd, you're raising your hand, I think, right? Or no, that wasn't raised. Okay, so let me, if I can just take a moment. I just want to wrap up the tshuva, and then I'll pause at the end to take any remaining questions. We're nearly at the end, but I just want to circle for those of you who are following here in the Hebrew. I double underline this for a reason. It says therefore, after all of this, the administration of these yeshivas, eina michuyavim, they're not required to accept non-vaccinated children. That's a very interesting formulation. Not that they're not allowed to accept them, but they're not required to accept them.
Who's so, requiring?
What?
Who's doing the requiring?
Jewish law, halacha. He's saying, that's what it sounds like. He's saying is that halachically, they wouldn't be required to accept these children because they pose a risk to other people. But it's just interesting because, and then also, I don't think I underlined it, but in the next paragraph, when I was looking it over before the class another time, he also says, uses the term, I'll try to find it over here. They have permission. They are permitted halachically to request demand that these children do not come to the Talmud Torah, to the yeshiva. But notice how he doesn't, you know, Ramosh Sternbach, being a Haredi rabbi is that the term usser is very much a part of your vocabulary. You know, you're not afraid to say something is forbidden or prohibited. That's how many of the tshuvos end. So the fact that he's not using the term usser over here, which I'm sure he's very comfortable with in many other instances, is a little bit telling. That even after he makes this whole argument, he still is leaving a pischon peh. He's leaving a door open for yeshiva to say, we understand the risks, but we are okay with accepting non-vaccinated children. Which, by the way, I'm just saying, there's like a million cheders and yeshivas. And, you know, if you're in Borough Park, Kensington, that whole area, or Farakaway, you've got a lot of options to pick from. So if one yeshiva decides they want to be the home of all the non-vaccinated children, there's other yeshivas for you to pick that will require vaccination. So maybe that's what he's thinking. You know, it's not like here in Stanford, if you want to send your kids to an Orthodox school, unless you want them commuting into the city of Riverdale, there's only one option. There's bicultural. So we got to figure out something that's going to work for the community. There's not only one shul, but it's, you know, there's our shul, the big shul. So we have to figure out something that's going to work for our community. It's not like we're just like yeshiva and a shtibel in every other corner and everyone can do everything that works for that particular subgroup. We have to figure out a solution that works the best for the most people. And then he says afterwards, not only is it one required, should someone deny these kids access if they're not getting vaccinated to school because of nefesh, but still, in addition to that, umagam sheish b'zechil Hashem is a desecration of God's name, or, you know, I guess in a more cynical way, bad PR. Shenostim yad leminim l'poshim lalo gal charedim shamachla misa faretzis dafka etzam. Because, well, you know, what's going to be the headline of the forward, right? It's going to be Haredim have super spreader event. You know, that's like the cover of every other Forward article you see coming out, or other, you know, list non-Orthodox newspaper. So what Rav Moshe Schoenbaum is concerned about, which is the reality, whether it's right or wrong, I'm not going to comment, but that is the reality. You have a lot of the non-Orthodox papers where their headlines are Haredim spreading coronavirus. So his concern during measles is very much what we have today, which is that we're basically just giving all the people who are anti-Orthodox or don't like Orthodoxy, we're giving them more ammunition to disenfranchise Orthodoxy. And you're going to say, and I've seen people, you know, again, the same group of people posting on Facebook that everyone in the Haredi community doesn't care about Bikuach Nefesh. That's what he's concerned about. But the truth is the opposite. That our Torah is concerned for even the smallest concern of Bikuach Nefesh. Therefore, he concludes by saying it's the right thing for the schools to make sure that kids get vaccinated. And he says, I wrote this for Israel. I'm an Israeli rabbi. But in the end of the day, America, there, the Hasidic rabbis and the rabbis there, you should figure out what's best for your own community. Now, we could have just read this tshuva and switched measles around with coronavirus. And I think I inadvertently did that a few times, where I swapped measles and coronavirus while I was saying it. Because this tshuva right here, I mean, maybe there's some huge distinction between measles and coronavirus. It's going over my head. But the principle of what he's saying in measles ought to be the same when it comes to coronavirus, I would think. That's what it sounds like based on the facts. So I don't have an answer to this question, but it's interesting to note sociologically now that if that was Rav Moshe Schoenbaum's position on measles, and if that ought to be his position on coronavirus, why don't we see more hardline stance being taken? And why is it that thankfully many people are safe, but you see many people in communities that would listen to Rav Moshe Schoenbaum the second he says something, they aren't keeping necessarily to the safety guidelines that you think they ought to. That's something that confuses me a little bit. And it's possible Moshe Schoenbaum is, you know, he's at an advanced age now, and taking public stances is no longer a part of what he's doing. I mean, I haven't checked in on his health recently, so I definitely don't want to, God forbid, place any blame on him for not making any public pronouncements. But it's a question that I'm thinking about now, which is this tshuva, it sounds like just swap coronavirus with measles, it could have been the same tshuva. I'll pause now and I'll take any questions until 9 o'clock. If anyone needs to log off, you're welcome.
If you are not diving in different mechanisms, that is new one, let's leave it alone. It looks like this one is not permanent, even in some description saying that it may work for 1 year or something like this, and we have no idea if it will work for different versions of this virus. Maybe
it's a good point.
Closer to flu shots than to measles vaccine.
So your point's well taken that the details aren't all confirmed yet. But you know what? Let me switch coronavirus vaccine with wearing masks.
That's different.
Okay, Toby, what's
I don't. I don't think they're comparable, and that's the key difference between the measles and the corona. With measles, all they were asking you to do was get the shot. So if there was pushback, it was just on that. Now I could be wrong, but from the limited vantage point that I have in the Haredi community, the little bit that I see, it doesn't seem to me that they're anti-vaccine so much. In fact, they've been, look at this thing with that para whatever, where they were like going through all kinds of machinations to get the vaccine, even though they weren't entitled to it yet. It's the restrictions with the masks and the distancing and those things, the impositions on day-to-day life that they rebelled against, the vaccine. I think
that's what the irony is. The irony is that the vaccine, you know, I personally think it's wrong, but, you know, one could say that there are still, like Alex pointed out legitimately, Not everything is for certain yet. There's still questions. I don't think they're even FDA approved yet. They have FDA emergency approval. So it's not like proper FDA approval. So like someone could raise a question that there is a risk. You know, look, I'm not saying we're there. Someone could raise that question, but there is no endangerment to health of wearing a mask. So the whole question of balancing pikuach nefesh, if you wear a mask, you're guaranteeing that you're almost guaranteeing someone's not going to get something from you. But if you don't wear the mask, there's no endangerment to yourself, unless like you're highly asthmatic and you're just going to, you know, I mean, other than that, even that, I don't know.
Rabbi?
Dina. Oh,
Rabbi, what is the weight of a principle like Altif Rosh Minhat Tzibur when majority is going to get, is going to take a vaccine and we're reaching for herd immunity? Wouldn't that kind of principle come into play, and that you're doing something wrong if you don't go ahead with everybody and
so I think,
reach for the herd immunity?
Sorry, Dean, that's a good point that I didn't consider, but I'm glad you bring it up. The Gemara in Tainus says that during a time while a community is struggling, one is supposed to take part in it, even if you have nothing to contribute. Now, certainly if you can contribute by contributing to achieving herd immunity, if herd immunity means everyone being vaccinated, I'm not sure if that's always what it means. Sometimes people say herd immunity and they mean everyone already caught the virus, so now we have herd immunity.
Could be either way getting antibodies, you know, with the vaccine or having gotten it.
So yeah, I think there would be, if a community determines that that is what's correct for them, then I think there would be an element of Altif Rosh Minhat Tzibur that you have to do your part to contribute to the Tzibur as well. That's very good. When it becomes more available, you remind me, that'll be a good drusha.
Okay. And one more consideration here is that actually you don't have any advantage if you already have antibodies. In one way or another, you still need to go in mask, and you don't get any advantage at all. And,
right, there's asymptomatic transmission, you're saying, Alex.
No,
right?
I mean that if you had coronavirus or you had vaccination, you still need to do the same. You still need to go in mask. We cannot go to shul without mask if you get vaccination. Or people who already had COVID and had antibodies.
All right, so I guess we'll assess that on the our future policies.
If I wanted to find out more biographically about Moshe Sternbach, how could I do that?
So I hope to do that at the beginning of next session, where I actually have a source sheet prepared with biographical material. But if you send me an email, I could try to send you some information. But honestly, I know this sounds really cheap, but the Wikipedia page has a lot of good information last time I checked in terms of biographical information.
So okay, I'll look again because I Googled him. I was curious.
Okay. Yeah.
My maiden name was Sternbach, and my father was Moshe Sternbach. So I'm very interested.
Oh, wow. So... maybe you're related. That's remarkable.
I don't know. I don't know. I thought he was born in London, so I'm curious what his background was.
Rabbi, can I ask a question? Is the standard for pikuach nefesh, the 1 in 1,000, was that developed at the time when women were dying in childbirth? What is that standard that
You said that that's one application of where there is now 1 in 1,000. I don't think they collected data the way they do today. You know, you're not having like peer reviewed studies, and you're not like using all this software that I used when I did experimental psychology and all the statistics. But it was more guesswork. It was very empirical based on what they saw around them. So you're right. Like, I don't know if you really strict 1 out of 1,000. It's like, if it's 1 out of 1,001, is that not going to be pikuach nefesh anymore? I don't know if that's what he means.
What do they use now? So, you know, for a standard.
So he has another tshuva that we're not going to look at in depth because it's very technical, where he goes through like all these different opinions. You know, I said maybe the extremes are 1 out of 10 and 1 out of 1,000. And he deals with like other measurements as well. I forgot, it's like 1 out of 50, 1 out of 60. So there's a lot of different opinions as to what constitutes pikuach nefesh. There's a whole range of opinions. It's in Tshuva. If you want to look it up yourself, it's in Chelek Hei Siman Shin Sadi Tess, and that's where he elaborates on all this and gives you all the opinions. So I could always send it to you if you like, Phyllis.
Maybe somebody will make a chart for us.
Okay. Maybe for a future class. All right. Yasher Koach, everyone. God willing, I will figure out the document sending for next time so I don't have to.
Very interesting. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right. Everybody. So looking forward to next week. Yasher Koach, everyone.
Good night.